Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mari Forth.
I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from Gadigal, Sydney.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. You can get this podcast along with all the other fantastic reality TV content by subscribing to robhasawebsite.com/rahapupsfeed. That's robhasawebsite.com/rahapupsfeed. That's RHAPUPS feed.
We'd love it if you would subscribe to our dedicated feed as well. Please go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays. If you've already subscribed, thank you so much. Last time we watched Crime Scene Berlin, Nightlife Killer with LaTonya Starks. Mari, what did we watch this week?
This week we watched What Jennifer Did on Netflix. It was directed by Jenny Popplewell. She directed two episodes of Rich and Shameless, The Crimes Against Pam and Tommy, and Farmer Bro versus Wu-Tang Clan, as well as directing American Murder, The Family Next Door. We covered Rich and Shameless episode Rodman's Stolen Millions with Chappelle back in episode 61. I also pretty sure that I did a recommendation for American Murder, The Family Next Door, on a previous episode. So I did enjoy that property as well. So can't wait to talk about this with our amazing guest. I've lost track about how many times she's been on here, so we'll have to consult the record books. But from Crime Writers On, Rebecca Lavoie. Rebecca, welcome back to the scene. I need to get an official count from Sarah.
17. No, counting the one where I forgot we were taping, at least 17.
Yeah, at least 17 or 18.
No, not that many. I wish it was that many.
I think this is number 5.
Oh, do I get a jacket?
You get an imaginary mug.
You're not at 10 for the engraved magnifying glass.
Yeah.
And the dad hat is around 7 or 8. Chappelle, I think Chappelle and Matt are the ones who have that. So that'd be nice.
That would be very nice. I'll take it.
A nice imaginary crime scene coffee mug.
Yes, and the invisible coffee mug like Wonder Woman has, right?
Yeah. Either way, we're so glad to have you back. It's always a blast to have you on, especially to talk about these Netflix properties because they just keep churning them out. So let's go to the crime for this one because I definitely want to dive into the property. In November of 2010, three intruders broke into the Pan family house in Markham, Ontario. They shot Bic dead and gravely wounded her husband, Han. 24-year-old daughter Jennifer called 911 saying she had been tied up by the intruders, who were three black men. 2 years before these events, Han had demanded that Jennifer break up with her drug dealer boyfriend, Daniel Wong. And in addition, Jennifer was leading a double life, telling her parents she was attending university, going so far as to fake a Bachelor of Science degree certificate. Police investigators determined that Jennifer had conspired with Daniel to hire the intruders to kill her parents. The killers were promised $10,000, with Jennifer estimating that she would inherit about $500,000. All of them were found guilty of murder and attempted murder and sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for 25 years. Following a successful appeal, all the accused have been granted a new trial. Jennifer maintains her innocence. This property was very, very interesting. So I cannot wait to talk to you guys about this. Let's start with our overall thoughts and feelings about this documentary, which ran about 87 minutes. So it wasn't a long watch at all. It wasn't a three episode arc like Netflix loves to do. Rebecca, what were your overall thoughts after watching the documentary?
Well, I do love a documentary that shows and doesn't tell. And I will say that Jenny Popplewell's other documentary, The Family Next Door, about the Watts case, is actually a documentary that I super loved because, the case is very, very, very dark. But what I love about that documentary is that it basically gives you the entire view of it through found footage and through, by found footage, it's not like,
Blair Witch or anything.
Exactly. Exactly. It's police body cam footage and interrogation footage. And you really understand, the progress of the investigation through the eyes of the cops, through Shanann's social media posts. And it's like, you get a really in-depth look at how that case unfolded. This has sort of that same vibe ish. And I will say
light.
It's like that vibe light. I wish there was a little bit more about some of the motivations and some of the, what maybe the media got right and wrong about the case, which is stuff I think that you can find on the internet a little bit. But overall, it's a story that I didn't know anything about. So, anytime there's a story that I go into and I'm like, I've never heard of this before, I don't know anything about it, it gets me, a little bit more interested than I would otherwise be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sarah, how about you? Your thoughts?
I liked this documentary a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I like the pace of it. It's, if I say stately, that sounds like it's boring, but it's quite slow-ish paced, which I appreciated. I didn't know the case either. I liked stepping through at that kind of slow pace. And I knew something was coming. So there's in another person's hands would be this, fireworks twist. Wow, twist. But it was just quite a gentle twist, and we knew it was coming. And I quite liked that because, why are we spending so much time looking and re-looking at the interviews? Why are we hearing the 911 call multiple times? Why are we talking to the victim's advocate? I thought, very interesting. We don't normally talk to victim's advocates. Why is she there? We just assume that she's going to be looking after the victim's interests. And yet, of course, with the swerve, her input is really fascinating. So I felt at the end of the 87 minutes slightly, where's the rest of it? I don't mind it being short, please give me short. But there were things I felt that I was missing. But whether that's a case of, it's an interesting start to jump off and do my own, people say my own research. It's just looking things up on the internet. It's just Googling things. It's not research. But you know, a little bit of side Googling never goes astray. And I think a property can intrigue you enough to go and do more, but be satisfying in itself, as opposed to something that has just got huge chunks missing and you have to go and find out for yourself and you're a bit resentful. And I feel like it mostly falls in that first category. How about you, Mari?
So I like the documentary, but I didn't know the case at all either. At least I don't think I know the case. And I left it feeling like I still didn't kind of know the case in a sense. Mm. Like, I definitely like realized that she was unfolding the case through the mostly interrogation footage. This is really just interrogation footage. You're talking to like the cops and the investigators, but it feels like it's just interrogation footage between Jennifer and Daniel Wong. And I agree, Rebecca. Once we found out that this director did American Nightmare, I wasn't surprised. I was like, yes, this has the same feel to it. I think the problem is American Nightmare had a lot more meat on its bones when it comes to everything that happened with the Watts family case. This case, at least what's presented on this documentary, felt very bare bones, felt very like cut and dry once they kind of broke the case open. I'm really actually kind of wondering, because I don't, maybe one of the two of you know, because I feel like it wasn't really talked about in the documentary. Like what was the timeline of this case? Like, it feels like they could have figured out that Jennifer was kind of behind this within like 2 to 3 days. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't really know that either. I mean, there's a couple of questions I have. I mean, I'll say, can I just talk about, I don't want to like dwell too much on the other documentary she made, but like, I'll tell you what was so good about the Shanann Watts documentary was that you get so much of the victim in that because they have so much of her social media in it. And you have so much of Chris in it because also so much of his, there's so much of him doing stuff before the murder, after the murder. I mean, there's just
after,
there's just so much of the people. And I actually think that like Shanann's like even her like MLM stuff online and her, you know, it's like that just paints such a complete picture of the situation that this family was in. It paints a complete picture of,
like, by the way, the tipping point was.
Yes. And this is not me victim blaming in any way, but it complains a complete picture of sort of like the dysfunction of like the discordant views of the relationship that she had versus him. You know, it really gives you a sort of a sense of like the awfulness of the crime when you see her portraying this image of a perfect life on social media versus kind of what you knew was actually going on. And it's just like, it makes it, I don't know, it was like there was a very like stark darkness to it that, you know, really drove home that wasn't just like, oh, this guy stuffed his family into a hole. Like, it could have been so gross, but it wasn't. And this is like, there's a very incomplete picture of both the victims and the perpetrator.
Yes.
And also an incomplete picture of the accomplices. Because I found myself wondering, like, why did Danny do this? And I actually asked, so I got to interview Jenny Popplewell and Paul Nguyen, the producer for this, for the Netflix documentary. And I asked, and basically that's kind of unknown because she had a very dysfunctional relationship with Danny Wong. Like, they had broken up. You know, he was dating someone else. You know, apparently, like, there was some real toxic stuff going on between them. And, you know, why he would participate isn't something that, you know, it's a very hard question to answer, right?
Yes. Even with the little that they gave us of the text messaging back and forth between Jennifer and Danny, it felt weird because it felt like initially she was like, oh, I want you to kill my parents. And he's like, kind of reluctant, I don't know. and then it flips. And then now she's like, oh, I don't know if I want to go there. He's like, I set it up already, though. Like, come on. I set it up already. You said this is how we... I was like, what is happening here? Like, I felt... so incomplete. Like you said, I don't know anything. I feel like I don't know anything about Bic, the mom who died.
She went dancing. She went dancing.
Yeah, she was a line dancer. Yes, yes.
That's all we knew.
And the father who survived, the motivations, the accomplices. Of course, I always watch all this stuff with my husband. And he was like, wait, but what happened to the people that helped her? You know, even the accusal of, oh, it was three Black men. As soon as I heard that, I rolled my eyes. I was like, of course. And then we don't even get who the accomplices are. At one point, they start blurring her face in the interview. I'm like, why is her face blurred when we've already seen her face? It felt so weird and discordant. And I'm sorry, audience, if it feels like I'm jumping around. But Sarah, did you feel like we got a complete picture here with this case?
No, it's almost like, and we're the last people to ask for three parts, but it almost feels like this is part one. And now rewind. Let's see what really was happening through, I don't know, through other methods, who knows? Or I wanted more, but I'm not sure what the more that I wanted was.
Right.
You can go to the Wikipedia page.
Go to the Wikipedia page. Well, apparently a bunch of stuff on there isn't true. I mean, that's what Jenny Popplewell told me. There's a bunch of stuff on there that's not true. Like, apparently, I went to the Wikipedia page before interviewing her, and there's stuff on there about how Jennifer, by the way, the title, What Jennifer Did, you said it was a slow burn, and like then you it was a twist. I'm like, is it a twist when the thing is?
No, it's not a twist. No, it was never a twist.
On the Wikipedia page, it says things like that, you know, Jennifer was so sheltered that she had never been to a party. Apparently, Jenny Popplewell found out that that wasn't true. They interviewed a bunch of people who had been to parties with Jennifer. They said that, you know, she had never, it says like that she always had never drove herself anywhere, that she was always driven everywhere by her parents. Apparently, her parents gave her a white BMW and she drove herself lots of places in that car. The Wikipedia page says all kinds of things about her incredibly sheltered life. It makes it sound like she was a prisoner in her own home. And that apparently is just not true. And apparently, like the beginning of her career as a liar kind of began, you know, it began early. It began like, she was not going to be a championship figure skater. She did not have this like Olympic aspiration that the Wikipedia page says she had. She was a very good piano player. And there was a lot of pressure on her, but apparently like lying about your grades and stuff is a very common lie that I'm just going to say I did it when I was in college the first time around. I was failing out, totally lied to my parents about it. It's a very, very common thing that people do. It does not make you a murderer. And like equating like lying about grades and stuff when you're young, obviously she took it very, very far. But yeah, apparently like researching it online is not the way to go. And that's something else the documentary doesn't address, is that all the untruths about this story that are apparently out there that have become the, you know, popular narrative about the case.
But wouldn't that be a fascinating focus to
take
it from that angle? To say, yes, here's Jennifer. Let's listen to Jennifer. Let's believe Jennifer. Now let's look and see the arms of all the lies and who covered and who helped and who didn't help.
Right.
What was expected and what wasn't. If you read the wiki page, you'd think this, but these things are demonstrably not true. How does this stuff, like, it could have had a broader, I mean, I do like documentaries that are just about the thing they're about, but yeah. I also like documentaries that place it within kind of a broader aspect.
Right.
And that's the
idea. Yeah.
I understand the mission here though, right? The mission I think was to just tell a story differently than it had been told before. I totally get that. But I think from a viewer like me, like I didn't know how it had been told before.
Right.
So I didn't know that it was breaking a previous narrative. I would have liked just a hint of the previous narrative, so I knew that this narrative was different and that this was more like just saying like, this is somebody who participated in a conspiracy to murder her parents. and people said this, but it wasn't true. Like that would have been, I think, helpful. Like this apparently really took hold in two pockets of media. Obviously the Canadian media, mainstream media went bananas with it, but so did the Asian media in Canada, which really ran with this quote, like tiger dad narrative, where her father was allegedly so oppressive that it made her like a killer. I mean, I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying that's the story that sort of took hold. And
I'm sorry, Rebecca, was that the story maybe presented at trial or?
No, that was a story that took hold like in the media narrative. And I don't know if that's what came out at trial. I didn't look at any of the trial.
Well,
coverage,
we don't get the basis of the appeal. And I don't know why 14 years later, they're still waiting for another trial. The timeline, even though they had day one, day whatever it is, up to day 10, you, Mari, I wasn't sure. They seemed to solve it pretty quickly, and yet the final title tells us that there's an appeal, and it's 14 years later.
Rebecca, you're talking about the Asian media?
Media and also the mainstream media like really did focus on this narrative about, you know, the pressure of, you know, being an Asian child and having these oppressive immigrant parents. And that really took on and really took hold without looking at the fact that, like, I mean, there's a bunch of things that were not looked at. I mean, one of the things that I thought immediately was like, she immediately went to like a bunch of black men that broke into my house. That's something the documentary doesn't address. And that's something that like it wasn't particularly addressed in the media at the time. Maybe it was, but that's not in any of the coverage that I was able to find. Like, there are so many dynamics at play here that, you know, were, I think, areas of exploration that a documentary about this could have taken. What I think these folks were trying to do was reset the narrative about this case. And I understand that instinct. I completely do. I think a little hint of what the conventional narrative was may have helped me understand that they were resetting the narrative.
I mean, I think I said twist, but it's not exactly a twist because, as you say, the title is What Jennifer Did. Okay, so what did she do? She did something. And I think because of the way it's set up and the atmosphere and the pace, we know something's coming. I appreciated that it wasn't, you know, treated as a huge explosion twist as another documentary maker might have done. So I liked it like that. I mean, we had our listener, Kirsten, sent us a message, just watched it and loved it. What did you guys think of the body language in the interviews? Was it obvious who was lying? I think that's a bit after the fact, and also because of the way the documentary is set up. We're on alert to why are we seeing so much of her. The idea that you can look at someone and tell if they're lying, I think, is incredibly dangerous, particularly in law enforcement. And we are going to meet the specialist in lying, whoever he is. The human lie detector who was backing her up into a corner. And I was like, such bullshit.
Honestly, it was a slow march to the unfolding of the story. I mean, you know, it's called What Jennifer Did. I felt like it was just building upon the story. So we get her first initial interview where she's crying, she's distraught, she's telling the interviewers what happened, what they initially think happened, you know, and who breaks in, the three black men, she's tied, she hears two shots, blah, 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 blah. Then the next interview, it's kind of like, okay, a little bit more, like she's revealing a little bit more and like, oh, yeah, my grades, they made me break up with Daniel Wong, but it's still like they still broke into our house. It was still random, you know, and like each consecutive interview was like the unfolding of the story. You were tied up on upstairs in the banister. Yes. How did you make the 911 phone call? Oh, it was in my pocket and she had to demonstrate how she did that. And then finally, like, the last one where she's basically confessing, or when she accidentally kind of like, at first they asked her like, you made this Bachelor of Science degree and they thought you had graduated. So they never found out that you didn't graduate. And she initially says no. And then later on in the interview, she's like, oh, they were mad when they found out. And they're like, wait, so they found out that you lied to them? And she had to like backtrack. So, I mean, I liked that aspect of it. I liked seeing the multiple interviews. You could definitely tell she was unraveling. You know, even the police said it on the thing, like she was holding her stomach. She was like shaking. She was, you could tell she was getting more and more anxious as some of those later ones went on, because I think she was starting to see that the jig was up and could not think past what she had already tried to come up with. And seeing that, I thought, was the most powerful thing about the case. And that's what gets you through. Like, I think that's basically the whole first hour and 10 minutes is when that unfolds. And then I just feel like that last 27-ish minutes is a little rushed.
Yeah.
Because we get the father waking up, we get the speed through the cave. Like, I felt like that last little bit rushed to you, Rebecca?
Yes. And I have an answer to your question, by the way, Sarah. So the reason she got an appeal was because the original trial judge made an error in not giving the jury verdict options for second degree murder and manslaughter in the case. So the judge made a technical error, and that's why she got an appeal. Mm. Anyway,
thank you for that answer.
You're Shrug. Welcome. It took me 30 seconds to look it up and find that out. Anyway, yes, no, I agree that it felt rushed. And to me, like the dad waking up, you know, saying, this is what I saw instead, all that stuff. Also, this is the thing that I really would love to explore, because I know this to be true. As a child, and I'm going to reveal something about myself that I've already revealed a little bit, I was a serial liar to my parents. I was one of those kids. I was. And the reason why is not because I was a psychopathic monster. The reason why was because I was afraid to tell the truth for good reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was in a very fraught, difficult situation, like not abusive, but a fraught, difficult situation where telling the truth, honestly, was emotionally more difficult than lying was. That is so common. Mm-hmm. It is so unbelievably common. This is why young people lie to their parents. Young people don't lie to their parents because they're evil. Young people lie to their parents because their parents create an atmosphere where it is easy to lie to telling the truth.
Absolutely. Yep. Period.
And this is not explored at all in the documentary, right? And also, like, I think that in Jennifer's case, there's absolutely a possibility that maybe she was that kind of teenager, and then that just snowballed, right? Not only so maybe she started there and then she met like the wrong people, you know, she got involved with Danny, then it snowballed into the situation where her parents didn't like Danny, and then she started lying to him, and like those, and then, you know, that behavior sort of became imprinted on her. Mm-hmm. And then she got involved with like some, and then Danny introduced her to some worse folks. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah,
rather than what happened to me, which was in my 20s, like I met some, you know, I created like my own sort of community and family and realized like you could just be a regular person and like be true to yourself and others. And your amygdala like doesn't take over your brain anymore. Like, you know, she never had that opportunity. Like, so I just think there's a whole like psychological aspect of this that I found really fascinating. And when you say it felt rushed at the end, like I would have loved an expert to come in and explore some of those adolescent. I know she was 24, but this all started when she was like 13.
Right.
And the documentary hints at that, but doesn't really like go into it, if that makes sense.
And this is nothing new too here, Sarah. Like half of Snapped is either like women whose husbands cheat on them or whatever, or they're cheating on their husbands. But the other half is always like a young girl who's fallen in love or something. Parents say no, and they revenge on the parents, or the parents won't let them do something like that. That is something that is, you know, not unique to the true crime space, but could have been explored here. Sarah, what do you think about Rebecca's ideas of that, like that teenage angst bubbling into over into murder.
Well, I mean, teenage angst. I'm nodding along, Rebecca, with your story. I'm also a very practiced liar from way back.
Exactly. Anyway, as an adult, reason. I'm a fucking terrible liar. I just want to tell you that right now.
But yes, the fear of the truth coming out. And in fact, there's a gorgeous bit of shade from Detective David McDonald, where he says to her, and, you know, this is key. He says to her, you didn't think this far ahead, did you? Because he asks her a question she can't answer because she's lied and then flipped and flopped. Mm-hmm. And he says, you didn't think this far ahead. And that's the thing with the serial liar. It's how to get out of the situation I am in right now.
Right.
I'm in danger of
reflexive
violence. I'm in danger of abuse, or I'm in danger of opprobrium, or I'm in danger of something. So I will reflexively tell a very palatable lie, but I'm not thinking about when this comes around, how am I going to back it up? So where does that, I mean, because I haven't murdered anyone. I've broken the law, but I've never murdered anyone.
You which have? Is just what
Very serious. Mari knows. A very serious crime that I was never caught for. Yeah. A foolish crime of my early youth, my early womanhood. But it's like, how does that turn to murder? Is it just, do you just get swept along? I mean, that's no excuse, of course. So having someone come in that final section and just lay down a little bit of cold science. Not that psychology is cold, but, you know, actually, Mari, I thought of you when she had the fake bachelor's in science. I thought, oh, Mari won't be happy. but to step back from, we're very much in Jennifer's world, or the attempt is to put us into Jennifer's world.
Yeah.
And I think stepping back from it and saying, this is how this happens, you know, this is how. So it's not just what she did, but this is how, this is a path that can be taken. Not, you know, seeking to excuse her. We never really got that. And so we're left with Tiger Dad, lying daughter who has no choice, pushed into murder by drug dealer boyfriend. And that's doesn't feel like that's not the story.
I'm looking at the talking heads, and we don't have it. The only talking head that we have that kind, like the victim liaison officer that you mentioned, but even she's a detective. It's like, it's all police. There's no, like a teen psychologist or like a early young adult psychologist here would have been great just to kind of do some inference on where Jennifer's head could have been at. But you know, maybe they didn't have
maybe the they couldn't find anybody who was. Well, the other thing too that I always think about is like, so Jenny Popplewell said to me, and by the way, Jenny Popplewell's lovely, so I don't want to like disparage her in any way, because she literally said to me, like, I can't put myself inside the head of Jennifer. True. Maybe they couldn't find somebody who was willing to analyze someone that they had never met, and they didn't want to put someone on the screen who was willing to analyze them.
That makes sense. Way,
is also very valid, super valid. Yes. So there's a lot of reasons why we may not have seen that. It just opened up this world of questions for me. And, you know, as somebody who I feel really strongly about like personal development of young people, and, you know, we watched there's another Netflix documentary that we watched that I did an interview about that I felt so differently after I did the interview about it that I had like very mixed feelings about when I watched it, and then felt so much more positively about it after I did the interview. And that's Unlocked, a Prison Experiment. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, seen it. So I felt when we were watching it, I had so many questions about the level of consent of the inmates participating. I had so many questions about the sort of good faith, whether or not it was, you know, really done in good faith. I had so many questions about just the idea of like an experiment being done on like incarcerated people, like the And then one of the people I interviewed was actually the sheriff running the jail. And the sheriff himself is the most like progressive guy running a jail I have ever talked to or like even heard of. And he's like unbelievable. And his whole thing is like, his whole thing is you need to give people an opportunity to, like, you know, there's this incredible moment in the documentary where the prisoners, like, completely, I'm sorry, the inmates, because they're not prisoners yet, they actually are in a jail, where they're prisoners, let's face it, they're being imprisoned, they completely fail, like, they completely break the rules, they buck it, they're like, and he, instead of being punitive and ending the experiment, he's like, no, they need to be given a chance to see that, like, their failure does not end this for them, because that's how society works. In, like, in a healthy society, you can make mistakes and be forgiven. And I like to see, like, sort of a more holistic view, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that until I interviewed the guy, because it wasn't present in the documentary. And I feel like sort of the same way about this. I don't know. It's just, I also get, like, when you don't have that material, you can't include that material. So it's tough, right?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Just on mental health professional psychologists talking about people they haven't met, I think that's a very good point. However, in two very good Netflix properties that we've looked at recently and sort of in the recent past, one of them being Crime Scene Berlin and the other being Dancing on the Grave from Netflix India, in both cases they had psychologists who did comment in broad terms, having not met the perpetrators, they commented in broad terms about behaviors and what can lead someone towards something and what the mentality is, particularly our woman in Germany who seemed very excited about the idea of killing someone. She actually put herself in that mindset. She was amusing, but she was also very insightful. So I appreciate someone, and none of us should be talking about the mental health of anybody we haven't met, particularly unqualified people like us. Mm-hmm. Yep. But I think that there is, in the way that we seek to understand humans broadly, there is value in saying these are the things that can happen. These are the lines of thought that can be made. I mean, as we sit here horrifically on a few days ago, there was a knife attack in a shopping center here in Bondi Junction, literally up the road, 10 minutes away. And our community is very, very shaken. A man just went in and stabbed more than six people. Six people died and more are injured. And then he was shot by a young woman police officer. How she's feeling now, we don't know. But his parents said, yes, he had mental health issues. So the whole story is about mental health issues, but with no, like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about mental health issues?
Right.
I mean, the press has been pretty not very good about this. We're all shocked. Of course, we have to, I'm sorry, but deal with some Americans saying, see, if you had guns, that would have been fine. But you're going, no, if he had a gun, it would be a lot more than six people dead, can I say. And we wouldn't have the wonderful image of a Frenchman holding him off with a bollard. You can't do that with a man with a gun. My point, and I do have one, is that I'm sure he had mental health issues. Like, look what he did. But what are we talking about? Are we talking about something from the list of things that are actually psychiatric issues? Are we talking about he was a bit upset? Apparently he was concerned that he didn't have a girlfriend. This from his father. Where's the, I mean, it's very close to us in time and place. So obviously there needs to be some kind of time and space to think about what all this is. But again, we need to place it somehow. I mean, some things are not understandable, but we need to place it somehow in a context of how the brain works, how we are as humans, how we interact with each other.
Agreed.
And yeah, so that's a very long way around to saying.
No, I agree. A bit of that. I think our willingness to dehumanize people who commit crimes is not great. I think it's bad, actually. And, we just watched this documentary, The Truth Versus Alex Jones. And it's about, Alex Jones, the media guy who is, he's a despicable human being who is a Sandy Hook truther. And, we had this whole conversation on Crime Writers On, and I was saying, like, people listen to him because he's a good broadcaster. They do. And it's like, you might say, like, he's disgusting. Why would anyone listen to him? The bottom line is he's good at his job. That's why people listen to him. But the documentary never mentions the Sandy Hook shooter's name. And that's a choice they make. And like, there's this whole idea about like, don't platform, because I actually think it's not contextual for that documentary, because that documentary is about Alex Jones. It's not about Adam Lanza. And so I'm saying the shooter's name, his name's Adam Lanza. He had severe mental health issues. And there's a lot of reporting around him and how he was failed by, allegedly by his mother. He was failed by an entire system around him. There were tons of signs that he was going to be violent, and then he was provided with weapons. Like, that guy, to just say, born evil, destined to murder a bunch of people, is not right. This is somebody who, I'm not saying would have had like a perfect life or whatever, but, I do think this sort of black and white approach to people who commit crimes is bad. And I do think some analysis is helpful, but it's like, you can only know what you know. And yes, I agree that and I think we're going maybe far afield here with this topic.
Yeah.
That being said,
this very simplistic approach, if you lived in a vacuum, and this was the only true crime thing you ever saw, and you had no context, you walked away from this without any sense of the intentionality of filmmakers, you might just think, evil person, period. No context, straight evil, born evil, did evil, deserves to be in prison. No, you know what I mean? And maybe that's true, but maybe there's other stuff going on and we can't know. Right.
Yeah. That's a very interesting take, because even I felt like her portrayal, maybe it was because we got to see so much footage of her actually. I still felt that she was a kind of a sympathetic character. And I think them not introducing the accomplices, not talking more about the setup of it, actually made her seem more sweet. And then all of this stuff that I think we're talking about, I think could have been alleviated is if we had even just a little bit of maybe the trial, some things that happened in the trial, because I'm always going to think, what did the defense say? What was her defense? You know what I'm saying? Like, what was her defense? So that's why when I hear that, he might have been a tiger dad and all that. That was my first guess. I'm like, okay, so was that their defense, that she was so, you know, trapped that she felt like this was the only way? Like, I really wish we would have gotten maybe just a little bit of the trial. But again, maybe if the case was presented a little differently, maybe I wouldn't be needing or wanting pieces of the trial. But I'm just trying to think of other ways that we could have introduced more information about the case and about the people themselves a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so let's wow, woo, we are in it today.
Yes, but sorry, I didn't mean to get so deep on you.
No, we love it.
Great, we're really thinking here, and you can tell, like, you can tell when we have properties that kind of get us revved up when it comes to like thinking, and it's always a good podcast when we're trying to fix it in a way, fix the property we saw. Let's get into our ratings, and we can do our final thoughts as we do our ratings. Rebecca, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate What Jennifer Did out of a possible 5?
Oof. This is a toughie for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is a real toughie. Because it all depends on, like, I know more about it than the average viewer, right? Because I actually like understand the intentions of the filmmakers. So given that I'm just going to be honest, because I do understand the intentions of the filmmakers, I'm not going to rate it as though I don't, which is like a strange thing. So with that being said, I'm going to say 3.75.
Okay. 3.75. Any,
is that fair?
Oh yeah, that's fair. Any more elaboration?
I would say I could have used, and I never say things should be longer ever, but I actually agree. You'll this see. Could have been 2 parts, not 3, maybe 2. Mm-hmm. I maybe would have separated it, you know, from the, I would have ended it at the revelation that she was involved, and then have part 2 be sort of about the conspiracy, and then about her going back in time from when she was a teenager, really going through the timeline of, you know, when she began, you know, lying to her parents, what her journey as a teenager was really like, you know, sort of unraveling that. And then also learning more. I think that maybe learning a little bit more about the parents, their lives as immigrants in Canada.
Yeah.
And more about, like, sort of the community, and more about the media around the case and deconstructing what was wrong about it. That's maybe what I would have done in the second half of it. So yeah, if it were a little bit longer, we could have gotten some of that. I probably would bump that score up a little bit, but yeah, I'm going to go 3.75 magnifying glasses.
Magnifying glass. Sarah, how about you?
Spot on, Rebecca. That's exactly what I would think. 2 parts seems deemed, or, you know, because it falls into 2 parts. There's the slow revelation and build, as Mari said, about the first interview, the second interview, the third interview. We talk to the very mild seeming detectives about their process. And I like process. I like them saying, we went here and we did this.
Those detectives were very polite.
They were very polite. So I think as far as it went, it was excellent. Like, it's as far as it went, it's like a 4.5.
Right.
But for me, I'm knocking it down to a 3.5 because it as far as it went, it was great. And then I sort of fell off a cliff because where's the rest of it?
Mm.
And I think in talking, I said at the beginning, is it one of those ones that sort of deliciously sends you off for really interesting side googing, but is complete in itself? And I'm also, I feel like I'm almost moving now to it being great, you know, not satisfyingly sending me off into Googleable stuff, not including why there was an appeal, Rebecca. But see, you just ask people and you get the answer. So 3.5 for me. What about you, Mari?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. I was going 3.5 as well, because I did like what was presented, exactly like you said. I liked what was presented. However, I did leave the property having more questions than I thought I should. Yeah. And I mean, I think we really talked over all of the things as to why. But I do find it very entertaining. It, you know, I don't know if that's the best word for when we're watching true crime, but it is. It didn't feel overdone. It didn't feel over sensationalized. Again, we're missing the victims here. We're missing the background for most of the victims, but really leaning into using the confessional footage, I think was a very smart choice for the director here. So 3.5, you know, way better than average. That's for sure. Okay. Recommendations. Rebecca, what do you have to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I hear this might be a repeat on the podcast, but I have had the absolute pleasure of going ahead in time and listening to all of the magnificent podcast Beyond All Repair from WBUR and ZSP Productions. That's Zach Stewart Pontier, by the way. He's also behind The Jinx and Jinx 2. He actually partnered with Anne-Marie Sievertson and made Beyond All Repair. It is, in my opinion, one of the best podcasts I have ever heard, bar none. And when I describe people what it's about, they don't think it sounds that interesting. And frankly, it's just about a woman who may or may not have committed a murder. And Anne-Marie Sievertson is just trying to talk to her and others and figure out whether maybe she did it or maybe her brother did it. Doesn't sound that interesting. It's actually about a very fucked up family. And it's actually about whether or not you can actually discover the truth when maybe, this is actually kind of thematic, you might be talking to a serial liar. It is just beautifully written, gorgeously delivered, perfectly made. And it is the rare podcast where the minute an episode's over, you immediately have to listen to the next one. And Anne-Marie Sievertson makes it sound so easy. Like, it's just, it does not sound overworked. It's just flowing out and it is just, it's gorgeous. She even makes the music for it. Like, it's an incredible, incredible, incredible podcast. And yes, I have gotten the rare opportunity to even listen to the finale. They sent it to me so I could hear it. And I just got to say, it lands the plane. It's really freaking great. And I'm so excited.
I recommended it last time.
I love it.
Episode several has dropped in your feed. I listened to it first before anything else. Can't wait for the rest. And did they send it to you, Rebecca, or did you beg on bended knees? Absolutely.
Oh,
everybody
no.
You know,
well,
to send you the finale.
I had, before we reviewed it on Crime Writers On, they had given us rough cuts through episode 9. And then last week, Anne-Marie sent us, Kevin and me, a new cut of 8, 9, and 10. And she said, please, just between us, you can listen to 10. You cannot share with anybody else. And please listen to the new version of 9. And so we listened to a new version of episode 9, which was very different than the version of episode 9 we'd heard before, and a lot better, like so good. And so I don't even know if the finale version I heard is going to be the finale version that everyone else is going to hear. But if it's even close, like, it's super good. Can I make a second small recommendation for something that I have not finished?
Of course.
So Anthony Horowitz is one of my favorite writers, and the latest in his Hawthorne series, by the way, he's writing like 2 series in a row, the Blank Flower series is like Moonflower, Mayflower, whatever flower series. And the other series he's writing is the Hawthorne series, where he writes himself into the series of books as the Watson to Hawthorne's Sherlock Holmes. The newest book, Close to Death, just dropped today. Came out in my Audible because I pre-ordered it and I was so excited to see it drop. So yeah, so that's out now. And if anyone else wants to listen to / read it and like tweet to me about it, I could not be more excited about a surprise drop showing up in my audiobooks. Janet Varney texted me this morning and was like, new Anthony Horowitz. And I was like, oh shit, I think I pre-ordered that. And there it was. And I was so excited. So, so excited.
Amazing. Amazing. Sarah, what do you have to recommend to our listeners?
Well, we have a listener recommendation from Jennifer. Not that Jennifer. She recommends The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping. That's on Netflix.
The best.
It's another, oh, double thumbs up from Rebecca.
The best. Freaking great.
It's another troubled teen property, which is why, because we'd already done Hell Camp, we thought, you know, we can't do everything that we want
to
do.
You have to do that one. You have to.
Okay. Very well. We've been told. Jennifer tells us, this is the one to watch. Very well done. Thanks, Jennifer. Rebecca agrees with you. We love getting listener recommendations. So send us by email, on Twitter, or via SpeakPipe. What about you, Mari?
Well, very shockingly, Rebecca stole my wind, stole my thunder. I was going to recommend Unlocked, A Jail Experiment. I watched the first episode today or just the other day, and I have done the 60 days in recommendation. Me and Jason Reed talked about 60 days in when he was on, I think last. He texted me. I was like, hey, you got to watch Unlocked, A Jail Experiment. It has like really good 60 days in vibes. I was like, bet. I started watching it and it really did. So I just started. Rebecca, I don't care if that was spoilers. I'm so in, because I did get the earnestness from the sheriff. I felt it through the docuseries to me. But it's nice to hear that he's like legit down.
Legit. Yeah.
So I can't wait to watch more of those episodes. I swear, I wrote that down before she said it. And I was like, oh, well, look at that. another thing I just looked up, the Jennifer Pan and Daniel Wong story was covered by Snapped. Killer Couples, Snap Killer Couples, season 6, episode 3. So I think I'm going to like watch that and see if I get like a different feel of the case and see how they presented the case, if anybody else wants to watch that too. So I haven't watched it. I just said I think I'm going to try and see what Snapped version of this case is. So
we love Snapped.
Mari, yes, can I just tell you something? If you have questions in Unlocked, the inmates got to choose whether or not they wanted to participate or not, which was a big question I had while watching it. So yeah, everybody you see on camera wants to be on camera, and lots of people are not on camera who did not want to be on camera. So like it is 100% opt in for these men. Good. And also following journalism rules, like the sheriff was surprised by some of the stuff he saw later, like on camera, like the documentarians did not narc in real time.
Oh, good.
Which comes in that's important later. You'll know what I'm talking about.
I really want to know if it's like the same production company or something.
It probably is.
Yeah, it has the same feel.
The director told me he makes a lot of reality TV inside of jails and prisons. That's their whole. That's
their shtick. Yeah, I could believe that. It has that feeling to it, and I do love watching 60 Days In. So that's why I'm very excited about this. So thank you for that. At Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's at Crime SEENRHAP. Or you can send us an email to crimescenerhap@gmail.com.
We're on TikTok at crime.scene and other social media at Crime Scene Podcast. And please remember to subscribe to our feed, robhasthewebsite.com/crimefeed. It makes a big difference.
Rebecca, what do you got going on, and where can the people find you?
Well, of course, I've mentioned it a couple of times. You can listen to the podcast on which I interview people who make Netflix stuff, and you can't make this up. Or you can listen to me and my crew review stuff that's true crime or true crime adjacent on my podcast, Crime Writers On.
Perfect. Sarah, where can the people find you?
The people can find me at Sarah Carradine on all the things. Over on Silent Podcasts, Naomi Calhoun and I are covering season 17 of Taskmaster UK. Having a lot of fun over there with that. And your Aussie queens, Annabelle Fiddler and I, are covering season 2 of Alone Australia. Our guest last week was Sam Smith from The Traitors New Zealand. And speaking of The Traitors, Sam Smith and I are covering The Traitors, Quebec. No, neither of us speak French. Yes, we're trying to make some heads or tails of it. You know, I took French in high school. You get the idea. And he played in The Traitors, though. He knows the game. So we're having a lot of fun over there. Please join us in our podcast, What Did They Francais? How about you, Mari? What have you got going on?
So me and Matt wrapped up the Wrestling Wrap Up last week. We went to WrestleMania. We talked about our WrestleMania experience, and now we are going on hiatus as I wait to deliver my bundle of joy. So I'm on hiatus on Wrestling Wrap Up, but over on the Recap Kickback, me and Chappelle are still opening the kickback doors. We're still having really fun discussions. And we talked about Good Times, Black Again, another Netflix show. It's the newest animated series on Netflix. And it was a very controversial show when the trailer dropped. So we had to talk about it on the Recap Kickback. We had to discuss it. So definitely go over to recapkickback.com to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or go to youtube.com/@recapkickback to look at our video podcast. But me, Chappelle, and Ty had a very interesting time trying to break down this new adult animation series that's supposed to be loosely based on the old show Good Times, and it's a lot of good debating over there. So definitely go in and check that out. But that's it for me. Sarah, what are we watching next week?
Next time on Crime Scene, we're covering The Jinx Part 2 with crime investigator Sarah Kellyan. Watch it on Max and send us your comments and questions.
Thanks to Rebecca Lavoie for joining us, Will from America for the theme music, and the whole RHAP team behind the scenes. Until next time,
case closed.
Case closed.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.